Welcome to Rooted in Gwaqwadzwin with Matt and Sam.
In today's episode, we sit with Dr. Nav Persaud, a family physician and health equity researcher, to reflect on what he learned through years of connection with the Gwaqwadzwin Meekin team and participants.
He shares how land-based treatment challenged his assumptions, changed his clinical perspectives, and redefined what healing looks like through a two-eyed seeing approach. This conversation isn't about theory, it's about stories, people, and a path toward a more just and grounded approach to wellness. We hope you enjoy.
My name is Nav Persaud. I'm a family doctor and researcher at the University of Toronto and St. Michael's Hospital in Unity Health, Toronto. My main area of interest is health equity or fairness in health and health outcomes. And I got connected with Gwaqwadzwin Meekin through another research study I was doing based here on the island with several colleagues related to ensuring that everyone in Canada ensuring everyone in Canada has access to essential medicines. And through being on Manitoulin Island, eventually got connected with Sam and the other Gwaqwadzwin Meekin team members. I was able to participate in some really meaningful site visits and was really honored to be able to learn more about land-based treatment in general and Gwaqwadzwin Meekin in particular.
So we're going to throw the term research around a lot. Can you break down what research in the field of mental health and addictions means or looks like?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, first of all, I think there are lots of problems in research. You know, in my area of health equity or fairness, research can be viewed as a bad word because a lot of people who experience disadvantages or unfairness don't really believe that research could help. Research is supposed to be the creation of generalizable knowledge. And I hope that the research I'm engaged in is. Research in practice can also be researchers writing articles about things that never improve health or well-being for the people being studied. And hopefully that's not the case for research that's done involving Gwaqwadzwin Meekin participants.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talk a lot about research and outcome measurement. What's the difference between the two?
Yeah, they can be complementary and in some cases overlap, but outcome measurements of a specific program are usually meant to evaluate how a specific program is working, and it can be used both for tracking purposes, can be used to help secure funding or to answer to funders who have questions, can also be used to improve a particular program. Research is supposed to be more generalizable, so the idea is that someone in another part of the world, for example, someone working in a different area could learn from an output of research like a research article.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So, you know, we try to, or we think that we do things a lot differently at Gwaqwadzwin. But what's your experience like? How does it differ from, say, a mainstream program?
Well, you do things a lot differently from what I have experience with and what I learned about as a medical student. Typically, treatments for mental health challenges and addictions challenges involve prescribing medications, sometimes engagement in structured therapy. I had never seen supports involve living on the land, learning about Indigenous culture, going on walks together, engaging in Redpath, watching movies. So what I am learning about through Gwaqwadzwin Meekin is completely different from what I had known before.
How does the land play a part in that? And from a research aspect, how do you quantify or kind of expand on that notion?
I think the best way is by listening to what participants have to say about the meaning of the land. I think when I learned that this was a land-based treatment program, I thought differently about traveling here to do site visits and to meet with staff and participants. But it wasn't until I heard from participants what the land meant to them and what reconnecting with the land meant to participants. So I think a thread that we heard that was connected through many participants was an idea of potentially feeling a connection to the land maybe when the participants were younger, and then being disconnected through a number of processes, including mental health and addictions challenges, and through Gwek Wadzwin Mekin, finally reconnecting with the land, or going through a process of reconnecting with the land.
Was there any consideration into looking at how that impacts identity and sense of self and belonging?
Yeah, I think the connections with the land were related to other connections, related to connections with family members, including members of other generations, parents, grandparents, reconnecting or connecting for the first time with Indigenous culture. For some, it was remembering certain words, starting to remember the language that they might have been exposed to as a child, and then again disconnected for a period. So yeah, I think you know, the connection with the land for some participants, I heard, was fundamental to other vital connections.
Is there anything, have there been any moments with Gwek Wadzwin that really stood out to you, whether that's, you know, being out on land or something with a staff or a participant, that something that you might recall?
Yeah, I think, you know, doing a site visit on Clapperton Island with my children, who were young at the time, and seeing participants interact with them and really enjoy the interaction, and over time realizing that it was because the participants were not around their own children, and they were thinking about their own kids, and also about what Gwek Wadzwin Mekin meant for them and their connections with their children and the rest of their family. And that brought home to me the stakes. You know, it's already clear when you're talking about mental health and addictions challenges that the stakes are high. Life or death could be determined by the outcome. And reflecting on those interactions with my kids, I could see that it actually just wasn't one life being affected, but entire families, entire communities. So it brought home to me how important the work being done through Gwek Wadzwin Mekin is.
When you were doing your studies, is there any consideration that's given to some of those more traditional philosophies like connection to family, blood memory, epigenetics, connection and relationship?
Yeah, I think traditional research looks at outcomes like whether or not people are using substances, whether or not they get admitted to the hospital, whether or not people land in jail. And I think through speaking to Gwek Wadzwin Mekin participants, my perspective on what a success of treatment could be really expanded. And success could involve reconnecting with family, learning or relearning about Indigenous culture, and reconnecting with the land could be a success as well.
Now, I'm curious, when you're doing research, what are the sort of measurements of spirit and how that plays a part in things? Because it's typically something that's not necessarily quantifiable when you first think of spirit, but what are some of the ways that you're able to engage and see those types of healing and wellness metrics?
Yeah, there's certainly not a numerical scale, right, where we ask people, you know, on a scale of 0 to 10, like, how did this program improve your spirit? I think it's more meaningful to listen to the stories people tell and listen to the way people describe the changes or the process that they're going through over the course of, for example, a 90-day land-based treatment program. And, you know, what I heard from people, you know, included stories about, you know, for example, going on a walk with a knowledge keeper. You know, and I remember one participant emphasizing the importance of one particular walk that they had taken with a knowledge keeper, and that walk had happened several weeks before the conversation where it was being described. And that, again, is totally different from anything that I had ever witnessed or experienced when it came to supporting people through mental health and addictions challenges.
Do you think there's a more general applicability of this type of programming and connection and sort of holistic approach outside of impacting Indigenous communities?
Definitely, yes. I mean, first of all, I think the general idea that traditional Western medicine has the answers to addictions and mental health problems that in large part have been caused by pharmaceutical companies lying about products like OxyContin and leading them to be inappropriately prescribed, and you know, scores of people being inappropriately exposed to these potentially addictive substances. I think that's a clear indication that we as medical doctors need to be humble about our role in all of this because of the untold magnitude of harm that we have directly and indirectly caused. So I think one general teaching is we should know our place as medical doctors and be humble about our role and maybe listen more than we speak. And I think also, although medical treatments obviously have a role to play and studies have shown that they are beneficial, the benefits are not complete. And I think that's putting it mildly. There are many people who don't benefit and others who only benefit partially. So there are many reasons to look outside of what we're currently doing to try and understand how we can better support people. And I think opening ourselves to Indigenous knowledge is one potential response. And I think there is more generally a need to think about how we can flip the colonization script around to help people heal. And I think land-based treatment programs where you are reconnecting with the land are a way to undo some of the harms of colonization, where people are violently removed from the land and exploited.
Do you think that there's a general openness to looking at these sort of I wouldn't even call them a novel approach, because it's things that have been ingrained in a lot of our histories to begin with, but an openness to doing things in a different light and through the medical field? Or is this kind of going to be a novel approach in terms of combining those two lanes?
Yeah, I'm glad you phrased the question that way, because it's definitely not new, right? You know, land-based healing is not new. And I think there really shouldn't be an excuse for not knowing about it. And I am embarrassed that prior to 5 or 6 years ago, I didn't know about it. And I think it really is an indictment of the medical profession that we've been failing Indigenous patients by not at least mentioning land-based treatment program as an option or appropriately trying to connect people who would be a good fit with land-based treatment, because it's not new. We should know about it. You know, like if there was a medication that had been invented 100 years ago that was an effective treatment for pneumonia, and doctor said, you know, I realize there are other people in other parts of the world who've been using this for a long time, but I just heard about it. You know, we would say, well, probably you should have known about it. Like, there could have been things that you did that would have led you to know about it. So let's think about why you didn't know about it. And if we do that for land-based treatment program, you know, what's the reason doctors don't know about it? It's because of racism. It's because of colonization. So we need to to think about what else we are missing out on, and not just what we are missing out on as a profession, but how else are we failing patients in general, and in particular, how else are we failing our Indigenous patients?
One of the kind of overarching themes in a lot of these conversations is looking at decolonization. What does that look like in a medical field? Is that something that can even be decolonized given the understanding, or what does that mean to you?
Well, first, I'll say I appreciate even being invited to a conversation like this. You know, as someone who's not really qualified to speak about decolonizing health, or, you know, in this case, supports for people with mental health and addictions challenges. But I think it is flipping the script. And instead of assuming that, you know, a doctor has the answers, and maybe, you know, the treatments that the doctor has in mind, like the medicines and the counseling, could maybe be slightly altered for an Indigenous person. Instead of that limited view, you know, let's think about all of the knowledge that we are ignorant of, why we're ignorant of it, and how we can totally redesign care. And I think, you know, land-based treatment program is maybe the easiest to understand in that regard, because it obviously involves reconnections with the land for Indigenous people. It involves obviously being able to physically access the land, to be there, and to benefit from it. And so it, I think, is a very dramatic and clear illustration of what decolonization involves. Mm-hmm. Decolonization certainly involves undoing thefts and harms that have been perpetrated in the past.
So you've touched on this a little bit already now, but do you think that there's any ways that your work and interaction with Kwikwatzmin has changed your approach to practice at all?
Definitely. I mean, for sure, it has made me think about you know, what else I need to be offering my patients in general, and my Indigenous patients in particular. You know, I think prior to this, maybe my assumption was that I knew about all of the effective treatment modalities, and I had assumed that through going to medical school, going to conferences, reading medical journals, that if there was an effective treatment for addictions and mental health challenges, I would have known about it. Someone would have mentioned it in a lecture. It would be mentioned in some of the online resources I used. And now I realize that's not true. You know, there are important, effective treatment modalities like land-based treatment that are not being taught in medical school, that are not in medical journals right now.
And how do you see the field of research and outcome measurement evolving?
One is, I think, changing how success is defined. Mm-hmm. So certain, you know, knowledge users, to use that sort of jargon, like government officials, might be interested in outcomes like avoided hospitalizations, maybe abstinence rates or rates of using substances. And I think if we want to, if we as healthcare providers work to help people meet their goals and to promote the well-being of our patients, then we really have to understand what is success for the individuals we serve. And if it is, you know, a reconnection with family or with Indigenous culture, then we have to think about what we can offer and support. And I think that also entails a change in what we measure. And we can continue measuring those other things. I think they're important to measure hospitalization rates, et cetera. But I think it's much more important to measure the outcomes that are of importance to the people we aim to help.
Amazing. We have a lot of organizations that reach out to us that are wanting to start a land-based program. And I think back to if I could have done things differently, and even Dr. Karen Minden, the founder of Pine River, told me, start out with research right away. You're going to have the outcomes. You're going to have the things you need. to prove your program so that you can go after more funding or just to illustrate that it's even working. So thinking about that, what advice would you give to a new program starting out that maybe wants to start out with research? How do they do it?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm biased as a researcher. I mean, I get paid for doing research. So I'm liable to say that it would be a good idea to involve researchers from the beginning. But I think it can also, the reality is it can be a process. And I think there has to be a good fit between the participants, the program staff, and the research staff. There has to be at least some element of trust there. And it definitely goes both ways. So, one thing I would say is, although it would be ideal to have researchers involved from the beginning, it could also be harmful, if the fit is not good. And everyone has to be on the same page in terms of why we're doing research and why the program exists in the first place. Yeah, there's an exploitative version of research where a researcher shows up, brings donuts, glad hands everyone. People share their stories, share their data. And then after a certain point, the researcher leaves, writes an article that you have to pay, a $2,000 journal subscription fee to if you want to read it. And no one ever reads the article. It gets added to that researcher's resume. And it's a happy story for the researcher. For everyone else involved, they could either be harmed or just feel sort of used. And I'd say even for the researcher, the reality is no one really benefits from that approach to research. I think, finding a relationship that works, where there's, genuine interest on the part of the researcher in understanding what's really going on. And then I think the program staff and the participants, if they want to do research, also have to have a lot of patience. Research takes a long time. There's no way to do it properly and quickly. But it can be difficult because you might have a funding opportunity that's coming up. There's a grant that the government is offering, and the deadline is weeks from now. And then you're talking to a researcher about when the report's going to come out, and they're saying maybe 2 or 3 years from now. So it's a lot of time and energy upfront without any sort of immediate payoff, at least not a tangible one. There might be, some benefits in terms of the relationship and hopefully some interesting conversations at least come out of it. But the time horizon for research can be frustrating for non-researchers. It can also be frustrating for researchers, I could tell you, as a person who's has an inclination to be impatient. I can definitely get impatient with research projects. But I think if you're under a lot of pressure, and if there's pressure to get funding, if you're running out of money, it can be difficult to justify spending a lot of time doing research. But my belief as a researcher who's biased here is that in the long term, it can be really helpful. And it can also help other people. And I think that's one of the benefits that I hope to see come out of our collaboration. And this, by the way, is a very long-winded way of saying, thank you for everything you've done over the past several years, many years, because I'm sure there were times when it seemed like a lot of work. And it was a lot of work. We never overlooked the fact that you all were helping to organize all of everything that we needed to do this research while you were putting out all kinds of fires, while obviously your first priority was supporting the participants and trying to grow the program, you also always found time to do what was needed, and we really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, I think that just speaks to our program and our adaptability always, and just, whatever it is we need to do, then that becomes the standard operating procedure. Mm-hmm. Just going back to what you were saying, so for that organization looking for a researcher, how do they find that good researcher? What do they do?
Yeah, I think, you know, this collaboration came about fairly organically. There was a connection through another research project. And so we got to know each other before the research project actually started. And, you know, obviously that's not always going to happen. And there's no way to really make that happen quickly. But that example could be instructive in the sense that maybe things happen at a certain pace that's beyond your control. And in the long term, that can be better maybe than like trying to quickly arrange a collaboration that ends up failing or maybe even doing harm. But, you know, the few other things that could be done, I think looking around at, you know, what research is out there and, you know, looking for someone who has an appreciation for what's being done already, who isn't going to ask you to explain all the basics. Potentially someone with a track record, either working in the area or in a related area. And also, you know, I think someone who's using research methods or approaches that you think would be appropriate. And I think, you know, there are different forms of research. I'm not criticizing other forms. But I think if someone has previously done research that really centers on participants or patients and has experience working with patients or participants to understand what their needs are and what their goals are and what outcomes they think are important, you know, so-called patient-oriented research, that sort of experience, I think, could be very useful when it comes to land-based treatment programs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we've been approached by a number of different folks looking to do research with us, and I think it was a lot of the times just, you know, listening to our gut, it didn't feel right. There just wasn't a fit for whatever reason. It wasn't aligning. We tried to make some of them work, and it just didn't pan out. And I think for you and with our outcome measurement with Dr. Laura Mills, it was about building a relationship that was mutually beneficial, that it wasn't just transactional, like you said, like it wasn't just a researcher bringing in donuts, asking questions, and then going on their merry way and writing a report. It was this relationship that developed over a number of years, you know. And I met both of you through someone else too, and so I had that kind of third-party network that helped me connect with you as well. And then, you know, we brought you out on the boat with your family, and you got to see what we were about, and we got to see what you and your family were about too. And I think that really helped to build a strong relationship. And then also, even the first time I met Laura too, we went for fish tacos. So I mean, that's a good way to my heart too, just take me out for food. But
also you're allowed to bring donuts. Bringing donuts is not the problem for anyone listening at home. I think I did bring donuts once, actually. I did actually bring
donuts. Just to go on record, we are not discounting the effect of donuts.
But I think that there is a serious point here is that also that research is hard work. It takes a long time, but it should also be fun. Mm-hmm. And it should feel fun and rewarding even while you're doing it, even if it might take several years. I mean, you should really believe that it's important. And, you know, that was also part of the way that I could sense that this would be a good fit is, you know, how it felt when I was here. And I always looked forward to coming back.
Can we unpack sort of the research project itself that you've been engaging in over the last few years? So first coming into it, what were you looking to find in terms of the study? I mean, we know, but just for general audience purposes. And how did you determine what the audience was? Like, who were you doing this research for in terms of benefactors?
Sure. We were trying to understand the experiences primarily of participants in the Gwekwadzwin-Meakin land-based treatment program. And we started out you know, attending circles, speaking to participants about how we should do the study after, you know, speaking to the United Chiefs and the Elders Council. And not just how we should do the research, but also what we should really be measuring and how success should be defined. And then, you know, based on that advice, we moved forward with interviewing participants with the in the presence of a knowledge keeper, and understanding their experiences, understanding what their experiences were before they came to Gwekwadzwin Meekin, what their early impressions were, how things were going then, and what they were thinking about the future. And then we also followed up with participants 6 months after they completed the 90-day land-based treatment program to find out how they were doing. Mm-hmm. And we hoped that our findings might help connect people appropriately with land-based treatment programs in the future. So one potential audience would be doctors, nurses, other healthcare providers who hopefully in the future will refer people to land-based treatment program where the fit is good. We also, through conversations with the program team and with others, recognized that there was interest in offering land-based treatment programs elsewhere and that there was a need that outstripped the current supply, should we say, of land-based treatment programs. So ultimately, we hope that this might inform changes that mean everyone who would benefit from land-based treatment programs in the future will be referred and connected at the right time.
How were the findings in terms of what came out of the research project?
The findings were really thought-provoking. So we heard about, the real meaningful benefits of land-based treatment program for participants. We heard about connections and reconnections with the land, connections and reconnections with indigeneity, culture, connections with family, and we also heard about how land-based treatment could fit with other treatment modalities. So we heard participants talk about how they felt just being on the land was equivalent to being on methadone or another medication. And we found out about what participants' experiences were in other treatment modalities, such as, you know, group-based therapy, where some participants felt where some participants experienced discrimination. They felt like, you know, everyone was expected to tell their story, but when a participant was the only Indigenous person in the room telling that story and exposing themselves, did not feel safe. And participants described, in contrast, how they felt when they were at the circle sharing and how they felt supported by their peers through land-based treatment program, partly because they were all on their own journeys, but going on a journey together as peers through Gwekwadzwin Meekin. Those sorts of results through the interviews were really powerful. And when we followed up with people, all of the individuals we followed up with reported lasting benefits of the program, including reconnections with the land and the culture, lasting long after the land-based treatment program ended, and also improvements in terms of substance use and mental health.
Was there any point through the project that you find points where you have to adapt or sort of follow new leads or threads? And how do you embark down that road while keeping it consistent within what you're trying to find as well?
We definitely had to, make some changes in terms of the way interviews unfolded and questions that we asked. We also, over time, through our conversations, both with participants and with the team, realized that getting the perspective of the staff members was also really important. So that's something we added later on to the project. And I think the program staff also talked about how meaningful the process was for them and what being on the land meant for them and just learning about land-based treatment programs in general was really meaningful for the staff. And I think some of the challenges experienced both by participants and the staff could also be instructive to others who are thinking about starting or expanding a program.
Did you see a lot of change from cohort to cohort or season to season or through the years?
Yeah, we had the benefit of visiting with a number of different cohorts. And there were some interesting differences. For example, when groups were more homogeneous when it came to the age range, and it was a more narrow age range, there was a different dynamic versus when there was a wider range of ages. And I think there were both positives and negatives. So that was something that we found interesting. Obviously, the study evolved during COVID as well. So participants talked about some of the challenges with COVID, spending most of your time inside a tent because of COVID-related restrictions. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of, some of the benefits of the intensity of the relationships that formed, but also some of the struggles being in very close quarters with people you didn't know well before.
Yeah. We often say two of our three programs are intense. Do you think there's going to be an evolution in terms of how research is delivered to even our ability to focus and engage in different sort of forms of entertainment and media and stuff like that? Will research always be just this output of something on paper that's then delivered to academia, or is it something that could evolve into some like different ways of storytelling and different narratives and different ways of presenting the information?
Definitely. I mean, I think, medical journals and other outlets that share medical information and share research findings are really struggling to connect with audiences. And I think everyone is open to new thinking about how to share findings in a way that really resonates with people. So I'm really grateful for the invitation to participate in this podcast. I think it's a really great way to think about sharing. And I think you can also bring in different voices. I learned a lot from speaking with the elders about this program in general and about the research project in particular. So I think that would be an interesting way, through podcasts or other media, to bring together different perspectives on a study. Obviously, when you're writing a research article, there could be input from many, but, there is usually one main author. Whereas in other media, it's easier to weave in multiple voices.
I think this kind of builds on the question that Matt asked just about, how could research be done differently, but we're talking about flipping the script on Indigenous wellness, so, and then that's part of moving forward in reconciliation. So what kind of role do you think research plays in that reconciliation journey?
Hopefully it plays a positive role. I'm not sure that it always has in the past, but I think there are a few ways to flip the script. One is by focusing on Indigenous strengths. And, hopefully our project is going to help shed a light on the strengths of land-based treatment program. And those strengths have been around for a long time. I think the other way to flip the script is to focus on the process of colonization, the ongoing process of colonization and exploitation, and think about the connections, for example, between exploitative practices where a drug company or multiple drug companies want to sell a product, they communicate with doctors, get a number of doctors on side, doctors who are also somehow benefiting from this whole system. And in the end, the main output is tons of harm and thousands of deaths. And, I think the very narrow-minded sort of research project could just focus on people who are harmed and, give the number of Indigenous people who are killed by opioids in this or that year, and or show a graph of how that number's changing or going up over time. Those numbers are important to track, but that focus is so narrow that it's at least misleading and maybe a lie, because you really have to zoom out a bit. And so why just focus on the harms? Let's focus on the process that's creating the harms. But it could be uncomfortable to do that, because the reality is I'm also a part of that exploitative, harmful system. And it isn't easy to, turn the lens towards yourself. And also, practically speaking, research also costs money. It's part of a system. And the reality is there's not loads of money out there to do this type of critical research.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
So I guess a big question is, where are you going from here? So now that we're kind of at the tail end of this research, does it beg more questions? Is there a kind of follow-up to where you're going with this? And what are you really thinking for trajectory?
I hope I'm going where you're going. I mean, it sounds like every time I come up here, there's discussions about how the program could expand in terms of who's participating, what additional supports are offered, including things like how land-based treatment program could best be combined with medical treatments. So I hope I haven't outworn my welcome yet, and that maybe as Gwekwadzu and Meakin thrives and grows and expands, I can continue to sit with you and think about how things are changing and what are the questions that we need to answer in order to continue improving things both here and elsewhere.
Absolutely. And I think for us too, part of that relationship building is that reciprocal knowledge transfer. So we're certainly a benefactor of a different angle and lens and approach, and to kind of share some insight as to what's going on with our program as well. Do you have any advice or anything to the general audience in terms of how we can flip the script and maybe change some of the narrative around Indigenous wellness?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was just opening my eyes and my ears and, learning things that I should have learned a long time ago. That would probably be my main advice. I mean, I think the other thing maybe for other doctors and researchers is to be very humble and, not to try and fit what you're hearing about into the framework that you were taught in medical school or when you were doing your PhD. I think you need a more humble approach in order to understand where land-based treatment programs came from and where they're going.
Chimigwich to Dr. Nav Prasod for his humility, his honesty, and his commitment to listening. I think back to our conversation with Dr. Minden in episode 1 and the importance of research in the Gwekwadzuan journey. I feel like we've come full circle with this episode and the work that we continue to do with our research and outcome measurement partners, and how it's aided us in understanding how we might need to grow and meet our participant needs.
The experience with Dr. Prasod was a great lesson for us as proponents of community-driven programming and showed us the importance of research in understanding impact and opportunity. If this conversation resonated with you, we invite you to pass it along. Rooted in Gwekwadzuan is a space for stories that restore, reconnect, and reimagine wellness. Until next time, stay rooted, stay connected, and stay open. If you'd like to learn more about the program, please visit www.gwek.ca.